celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis.
Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today we have Kate Mason. She is an award-winning sports presenter and journalist, widely recognized for breaking barriers in a traditionally male-dominated industry, from leading national TV coverage of a men's cricket test series, a first for the woman in the UK, to becoming a key voice for the Women's Champions League coverage. Kate brings passion, precision, and presence to every broadcast. Her Metro column recently earned the publication its first ever Columnist of the Year nomination at the SJA, British Sports Journalism Awards. And that's exciting. We'll dive into that too, because how that evolved. Super fun. She is also a very familiar face and voice across the BBC, Sky Sports, The Guardian, and played a major role in the 2024 Paris Olympics coverage. Known for her cultural fluency and trailblazing achievements, Kate continues to shift the needle for women in sports broadcasting. And your own inspiration to become a sports broadcaster, from what I read, came in 2012 when you were actually watching the London Olympic Games. So the fact that this past year you proudly could take place not only as a voice but a notable, reliable name in the Olympic coverage is just so cool. Congrats. So as with all tall poppies, she's more than a simple noun of broadcaster. She's an advocate, a journalist, an athlete, a keen community member, and today we're going to find out a lot more because she's a guest on Tall Poppy Talk. My first question, Kate, is where and how are you today?
Oh, thank you so much for that introduction. I feel, I'm blushing. I feel warm. I've come over all hot. I mean, I think, yeah, in Tall Poppy, true Tall Poppy fashion, like having someone tell you all the stuff that you've done is quite embarrassing, but beautiful also. I'm in Prague today, which is an incredible city. If you haven't yet been, I would definitely recommend it as on your European travels. And I'm really well. I present for TNT Sports, I present for them most, like pretty much full time at the moment. And they're a great broadcaster in the UK and across various places. But we do this thing called the UCI Mountainbike World Series. And I'm on a 4-week stint of back-to-back weekends of that event. And so the weekend just gone was in Poland. And then the weekend coming is in a place called Nowe Mesto in Czechia. And so I stopped over on the way to there to see a couple of my friends who live here. And honestly, like, getting to broadcast sport is so like the energy that you get from it and the energy you put into it is just massive. So all of this is building up to explain to you that I had an unbelievably long and brilliant night's sleep last night, because the previous night, I don't know, it was like sort of one night was like 90 minutes. And yeah, it just doesn't, because I get, there's so much energy, you know, the night before you're a bit like sort of stressed and things are going on and like, oh, I've got to make sure I'm ready. And then the night after you're like, oh, I'm so full of like what we've just done. And oh my goodness, could I have done this differently? And what an unbelievable run it finished on. And there's like, it was actually snowing in for part of the event, so we were kind of standing out in the snow, quite cold and quite like buzzy and full of coffee. So today, Grace, I feel unbelievable.
What? Thank you for that energy too, because I'm with you. I'm understanding. It's like when you're in the lead up, it's what can I do? That's that athlete mindset of, have I rode up all my ducks as much as I can? And then afterwards, you just get this huge endorphin rush of like, we did that. And I saw that, yeah, there was snow, which is, again, you're like, what? What? Okay. Didn't factor that in.
22 degrees in London when I left. Yeah. What?
Yeah. But amazing. So then this weekend, and you've got two more weekends afterwards, where are those? What's the location of those?
So, yeah. So this one, we're staying this in Czechia, and then on to Ludenfjell is the third one in a row, and then a place called Leogang in Austria, both of which I've been to before now. But it's like mountainous. I mean, so this is a bit more detail of this series, just so you get the where we're at. So basically, there's two different disciplines that we cover specifically on the shows that we do for this series. One is downhill, which is the like, you might have seen clips of, some of your listeners might have seen clips of it. Just people, it's basically 3 minutes down a mountain, fast as you can. It's it is truly like captivating in its like insanity, basically. These people,
Terrifying.
the people, you know, it's sort of a slightly different mentality, but a similar level of risk tolerance profile to like the climber Alex Honnold, who climbed up El Cap without any ropes.
Yeah.
These people, they just blow me away in the way that they're able to just sit up at the top of the mountain, ready to go, and be so calm and so collected and ready. And then the other discipline, which is the one we're focusing on next weekend. So the one we've just done is downhill. And next weekend it's cross country Olympics. So that's the one you would have seen at the Olympics.
Yeah.
A British guy called Tom Pidcock won the men's gold medal, and he it's more, it's like you go up as well as down, basically, is the way to tell it apart. So these guys are just ridiculous athletes with unbelievable pain tolerance threshold. It's an exhausting sport, and so yeah, the intensity both of the people doing it and of the fans is it's like amazing.
And one thing too with the down, well, up and down is like if it's similar to even you see the down, the skiing of yes, you know, like this is the slope and this is potentially what it was at the start of the day, but as each athlete goes, they divot and they move and then their bike impacts the route. So then suddenly it's
Yeah.
every single run actually is quite different because the
Yes.
previous people have altered the path. So it's not even like, oh, we know this corner is going to be bad or this corner is going to be
Yes.
difficult. It's suddenly like, okay, that was difficult, but now because of the rain and the 20 people, whatever it is, it's over here. So you have to be on alert for that stuff.
Yeah, and talk about the snow, you know, the temperature as well. Some of them have got special kind of compounds in their tires that they use for cold weather, so it doesn't, so they're still kind of like the right level, the right sort of density, I guess, is the right word for that, even though it is snowing. And then you're absolutely right, the rain is a real killer, because if the rain, depending on whether it's coming down and like sitting on the surface or whether it's soaked in and then it gets kind of boggy, yeah. And also to contrast as well, so this coming weekend, the Novo Mesto one, that'll be back to the cross country guys and girls, and we just, the first round of the season was out in Brazil. So if you compare, not just on the day, but just in comparison to the heat, what they're dealing with out there. In fact, one of your Kiwi girls won the first round, Sammy Maxwell. She's this, you should, she's so
Yeah.
amazing. You should get her on. Yeah, so she, anyway, but to the contrast of like, what was that? I think it was like 25 degrees, maybe, like boiling, humid. Everybody's in the same environment and has been for several weeks trying to figure that out. To then go to, look, it's not as cold. It's not, hopefully, it's not going to snow here, but it is, it's not Brazil.
It's not result. You're right. I do need to get her on because I've had cyclists too. It's different disciplines, but just that pain tolerance, as you said, and that mental psych. So
Yeah.
fascinated with that. Okay, I'll revert to this first question I have because I love how niche we're getting already.
Sorry.
Details, but that just shows your
You
passion
could
and
tell me to
your.
shut up. You
No.
like, can we please talk about something else? Okay, I get it. You
No,
like
I
it.
really, really appreciate seeing when someone. Like if you're reporting on this, you become like a little expert in the sense that same when a lawyer, if they're suddenly on a case about, I don't know, like a grocery store dispute, they know about grocery store. Like you just have to start to know your discipline. So when you're reporting on something, it's like you do become a subject matter expert and it moves around. So it's really cool when you see that being like exercised. But to take out, because I like to look at this whole holistic person, without using the word reporter or journalist, how would you describe yourself?
Is this in, I wanted to, is this in full, like fully me, or in the kind of the job space that I'm
Oh,
doing?
you. Oh, you.
Me.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm an enthusiast. That's pretty much all of it. I'm like super curious about almost anything you could imagine. Sport was the thing that I wanted to work in, because it's just so much fun, and I just value what these guys and girls are putting themselves through every day. But the key thing is that when I left university, I was trying to figure out what I could do as a career. I was like, I want to have fun and I want to find stuff out. So that's what I'm about. That's what I am.
So perfectly said, just from our interaction of enthusiast, whatever that may be, it's whatever's in front of you, you're enthusiastic about. And sport too, it's so cool because it's cyclical. Like there is seasons and there's repeatable things, like even in the US there's March Madness or there's the Super Bowl and you have the Commonwealth Games. Like there's things that happen. However, the variables, which are the athletes or the support people like yourself and the production, like that changes constantly. So in terms of audience awareness and education, you don't really have to lift too much because we know when the Olympics comes, even though I'm not like in, have never competed in the Olympics, because it's somewhat cyclical, I know what I'm looking for, but you get excited by all those different players who are in there. So I do think sport is, it's in some ways a really well-oiled machine, but super new constantly. So that's why it's perfect for someone like you who's curious and excited about it.
That's so cool that you've identified that for me. It's really interesting talking about the, because day to day, you generally do what you're doing and try and do it to the best of your ability. But it's quite rare that you take a step back and think about, am I still, or I'm trying to do this more actually, and think about, am I still going down, what route am I trying to go on? And I think that's the key point about sport, is because of the calendar and the different events, and because of how many people are fans of all the different sports that I get to be involved in, it means that you kind of have touch points with all of, I don't want to be like all of humanity, but like I don't know how many, say, football fans there are in the world, but I feel like the number of places I've been to where you can have a conversation about the Premier League or the World Cup with somebody in randomly in Borneo, or like, it's that, I think, was another crucial point to me, was that making connections, and keeping a part of the social community. Because I think sport, like doing sport, playing a sport, being part of a sports community is like an absolute good, or if handled in, I know there's lots of, that's a whole nother conversation, but there's all sorts of struggles in sport and difficult moments and examples of coaches and stuff, not that I was reading about today in particular, that not helping their charges in the way they should. But in terms of what it can be, I think it's the greatest thing.
Agreed. And I think the fact that people are seeking out, like, if there's always going to be bad, there's bad and the good, that's it. But seeking out those positive and those connections, because I'm sure with you, a lot of your best mates and connections you have are with people through sport, because you've seen the spectrum. Humans bond when adrenaline is present, right? And you have adrenaline when you win, and you also have adrenaline when you're in pain or really tired and exhausted. So it's just that human to human connection. So when you're watching the Olympics and you're covering it, and someone's voice, yours, is the one that's helping to like translate what's being said. Like even the thing you mentioned about the different tires and with the weather and the temperature, how that you're educating me. So suddenly when I'm thinking of that sport, your voice will come into my head. So it's this kind of parasocial responsibility or role you have with people who, they know your voice and they know you, but you don't know them. What's that like?
Yes, that is such an interesting experience, I've got to say. Like I never, when I was thinking about becoming a broadcaster, I wanted, like I've said to you, I wanted to make these connections, and I feel like it's such a powerful force for good when people get the chance to be part of a sporting community and part of what's going on. And I don't think I really thought about my like what impact my place in that, like what impact it would have people knowing me, because I wasn't really, this might sound a bit stupid, but I didn't really think about the idea of like fame and like you being one person and having access to talking to way more people, like the example you're making. I'm not famous. A few people would know me, and people come up and say, oh, I saw you on this thing, or like always friendly. Like no one has ever come up to me in the street and been anything other than amazing. Of course, online we know that there's a slightly different relationship sometimes. But in terms of that contact with people, it's not something you can really prepare for, because as you can perhaps tell, I feel a real responsibility to trying to create a warm space and a friendly space for people when they're watching the broadcast. And I'd also love everyone to go out and like try the sport. I mean, within reason, obviously, do it safely, guys and girls. But you know, I love people to go out and give these things a go. So I feel like that's a big responsibility. But equally, you know, I'm just one person. The human brain only really has capacity to know, I think it's about 150 people. That's the, yeah, there's a research about that. There's, you know, the outer reach, maybe 1,000 contacts. But so it's a strange, it is actually a strange feeling that some people kind of know me. And I, when I meet, it's always such a privilege to think that I've spent a bit of time with these people and, you know, whatever. They sometimes tell me a bit about something that I might have said that they remembered, but I might not remember it myself. So it's kind of humbling to think that it can also be stressful, obviously, Grace, because you know, you're like you don't sometimes you can't, particularly with live TV. So I also do not live stuff, you know, I've made podcasts and documentaries and things that are more like considered, and you do get to script it and think really carefully about how you're going to try and put something. But in actual live, a live sports broadcast, I was thinking, I did a bit for some students last week. And so I was thinking a bit more about the practical things that go on to make a live TV production in sports. And there's just so many inputs. You know, I have an earpiece and I've got whatever it is, six people who potentially could be communicating with me in my ear. There's obviously the, you know, in the case of last weekend, the snow falling down, the crashes, the things going on, the people next to me, the cameras. It's not, I've read a whole thing about how multitasking is not really a thing. Like the brain is actually only, you know, you're doing it, but basically you're only concentrating on one thing at a time. It's effectively your brain is switching between all of these things. And so sometimes you almost like can't remember the whole show. People will be like, oh yeah, so what could we do a bit more on that, the second thing that we were talking about? And I'm like, cool, absolutely, but you might have to tell me what it was. And that's quite a scary experience in the moment because you so want to do the right thing. And I've seen all sorts of broadcasters who have had slip ups or have had in the moment have said something a bit not quite right or phrased themselves as they wouldn't want to, and that can cause them huge problems. But mainly, I guess you have to just remember to like dial it back down a bit and not stress myself out completely. You have to remember your intentions are good, and hopefully you'll come across as you are, and the people you work with and the people who know you on air, like they have that context. So that's why it's nerve-wracking, just to answer a completely different question. But it's also so cool to be connected with people, and exactly what you said, to be connected with moments in people's lives that they will never forget.
Ever. And just thank you. My mind goes in so many ways of what I want to ask, but one that I thought was quite really cool, and this is a selfish question, sorry listeners, but more of a comment is like the more I've done these interviews, yes, the preparation is always what makes me feel the most confident and calm because I can look to my notes or whatever and feel prepared. But the more reps I've put in with each guest, I trust my instincts the same way when I was rowing, the more I put in the reps on the water or the distance, I knew I could do it. And so it kind of makes me think sometimes of, you know, when you're around like children and suddenly you have this filter and you don't swear, even though you don't know why, like you're just able to, it just comes in and suddenly swear words, profanities, they're out. And what it sounds like my interpretation when you're doing live broadcasting is well, like when you first started getting around kids, you're like, oh, I've got to remember. But at some point, as we get older, it just clicks. We don't even think about it. We just have that filter. And so the more you do your live broadcasts, it's like the filter of that live broadcast professionalism gets stronger and stronger. And that's why you see the people like you, there's a bunch of Kiwi commentators and broadcasters I love to follow. They just switch on so quickly because it's the filter.
It's really true about that swearing thing, and also very relevant to on air. Like I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here, but I really fucking love to swear.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
You can bleep that, I thought, because we're not live. But you know, I it's never I mean, touch wood, hugely, just because you never can say never, right? But it's never, that's never happened. And I don't, I think you're right. Your kind of brain space is different when you're quite experienced at something. And that's the thing, again, thinking of those students I spoke to last week, like that's the thing that's really hard when people are trying to get into broadcasting. That's a really hard thing for people to acquire because obviously you want to be a sports presenter, you want to be a broadcaster. It's very rare, unless you're like famous for doing something else, that anyone's going to be like, sure, come on air and just like do this show. Who knows what's going to happen? We don't mind. So you have to figure out a way of practicing that and getting your hours in.
Yeah, that's how this podcast for me initially began. I did want to have these conversations, but it was, I want to go into this area. I'm not sure exactly where, but talking with people and exactly that, I was like, how do I,
Wow.
how, where, no barrier to entry starting with the podcast. And then there's lessons, you know, they say you keep getting served lessons until you learn them. And so I try to learn quickly. But one thing in talking to about the work you were doing last week with the students, and you've done a lot. I mentioned in the intro, like you really do advocate, which is just cool. So thank you as someone aspiring myself. And essentially, it's like there's a lot of firsts. You were the first woman to do this, or the first this. How do you balance the first, so being the first, with not wanting to be the only woman?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that I'm lucky in the era that I'm in now of broadcasting and of sports, where I've heard and spoken to people who've worked in the industry 20, 30 years ago, that the truth was that there might be one woman on something, and then the bosses would think, right, great, perfect. We've got one woman, so that is our woman. So that's going to prevent anybody else, female, being allowed to be involved in this. And my personal experience of broadcasting and of being around people women who've been very successful in this field, I'm thinking now because I want to make sure it's true, but maybe there's something I've forgotten, but I don't think I've ever come across a woman in this industry. Me personally, I'm not saying there's not any who hasn't been totally up for taking you for coffee, telling you what you might want to do or people you might speak to. So I have to say, I think from people who are, much older than me and have been in doing this for 30 years longer, whatever, I think that's even more impressive that they're like that, because the reality was for them back in the day, they were the one woman, and if another woman wanted to be involved, then they would just probably get cut. So that is, and I think I take a lot of inspiration from that, because given that they were able to be that generous back in the day, there's absolutely no excuse for not being like that today. And of course, it's absolutely ludicrous that in the past people would think, "Oh, right, we've got one woman, that's perfect. We don't need any more." Yeah, let's hope that that's no longer the case, even though there are still lots of places where, like so TNT, the way that they've tried to make sure that they have as many women as possible, they're actually actively thinking about it. A vast majority of the pundits, the people, especially in football, especially in men's football, doing their kind of expert roles are going to be men. So they said, okay, well, great, we're going to over index might not be exactly the right word, but that we're going to have a more women doing
Oh, cool.
presenting, or trying to like match that up with as equal a representation of female talent, is the word they use, blah, as the pundits. And of course, ideally, I would love it if there were an equal number of female pundits as well as experts, whatever you want to call them. But for me, that's just is a really nice sign that they're trying to figure out how you can, given the reality of the situation, how they can try and make those moves. So yeah, I think it's really important. Plus, it's just cooler, isn't it? It's just better when there's like a range, and not just of women, but also of people of different backgrounds, people of different races. That it's just better, because otherwise you just it's more so much more stressful having to take on the role of being like the woman, always bringing the woman ideas into a situation if you're the only woman. It just gives you a whole heavier, and people I know have been the only woman in a like an editorial environment, and they haven't tried to push female stories. And I absolutely think that's fine. You know, it's not, you don't have to, you don't always have to be fighting that whole thing. But I guess for me, that was part of the motivation for getting into the industry, wanting it to be more open to the female viewers, and everybody, just like viewers of maybe who haven't been reached before, but also to women getting involved. So yeah, that's something that really does drive me. And when it feels a bit like, yeah, tough, and I sort of feel like, oh God, are we actually making progress? The reality is, yes, we're making progress. So much progress. So many more people involved. And I was just talking earlier today about the Women's Champions League to a journalist, and it was great because I was reminiscing, not really reminiscing, really, about 10 years ago when no one was, there wasn't anyone at the games, and it was like almost impossible to get any information about what was going on. And then to compare it with today, ah, wicked. So it's important to think about these things, and it's important to talk to people who are trying to be in the industry because it's just so inspiring that everyone has their roots in and is excited to be a part of this. What could be better?
Yes, and I really appreciate that you said like you do reminisce, or you're, and we are in this era where I undoubtedly am aware that had it not been for the many women ahead of me and men who are advocating for not just like, oh, the token woman, but like, no, they're the, like, we need their thoughts. They're smart, they're relevant. Like, it's not just like, oh, let's tick it off. It's like, actually, no, that's going to really open up and expand our reach and our connection. And especially being in sport, I've been in New Zealand and in the US, of there's actually money in women's sport, which is going to increase the pundits, as you say, the
So much.
experts, because so many experts, it's like, oh, well, they were professional players or whatever. They're from a long, long, long time, there's been no professional, like, and it's still being worked on, but like the ability for a woman to be able to get to that expert level and play professional, there's just fewer because there wasn't money in that
Yeah.
game. And as much as we, you know, love to play the sport, you love to have money as well. So people had to like do other things. So I do think it's like that rising tide that we're going to see from more coverage to woman to war woman covering it. It's just going to increase. So I'm really excited to see that and how much I've seen it evolve even in like that past 10 years. And you think too, Iona Mayer, the rugby player, like the American rugby player, I'm from New Zealand, like I know rugby, have always, but
Yeah.
I don't think there's one person who's gained as much traction as she
Yeah.
has for the sport, at least in the modern time. So that's really, people like her are really inspiring as well.
I think she's the most famous current rugby player in the world, like male or female. She's so, and what she's done to get is mad. Because so over so many years, people would have said, "Oh, you know, women's rugby is not like." Not very sexy, is it? Like all this stupid stuff that people used to and still say, you know, it's just like, guys, women being involved in sport is not about trying to be sexy to men. Like, sorry, blokes.
Newsflash.
Like, yeah, I get it. You're this, you know, what else could we possibly what we want to be involved at this for apart from to have nice asses for you?
One thing too with Iona, and she's talked about this a lot, of like not imposter syndrome, which I appreciate because you, right? Like she's been pushing, like, I don't have imposter syndrome. It reminds me Eric Murray, who's a very famous New Zealand rower. I interviewed him on the podcast and I asked about how he like dealt with imposter syndrome at the Olympics and stuff. And he is the one and only person so far who's like, well, I didn't doubt it because I knew I was the best. Like him and his doubles part, his peer partner, Hamish, like they were the best. They had all the world records. They had all this. He's like, I looked across at everyone. I was like, I've outworked you. I've out trained you. I've done all these things. Like, I am
Eric.
the best. And I was like, and he meant it and he was correct. I was like, could you imagine? But it was so cool to hear that from him. And so when Iona is also saying these things about, no, I don't have imposter syndrome because I've worked hard, etc. But there's a difference with imposter syndrome to tall poppy syndrome. And so if you're familiar, I would love like your definition, of course, no right or wrong answer on like tall poppy syndrome, and then how you feel like you've experienced it.
Ooh, people trying to cut you down is what it's about, isn't it? I think, and I actually I looked into it when I was looking. I saw your amazing little clip and montage of all the people talking about it. That's so nicely done.
Thank
And
you.
I thought, and it said somewhere that this is more like a kind of a new an Aussie, a Kiwi thing, which I didn't necessarily realize, because I think there are certainly parts of England, in particular, that would identify with that as a cultural norm. Like, don't get too up in people's grills. Don't rage yourself about the place, which I actually kind of support. And sometimes that can be, I agree, people shouldn't be all like, oh, I'm necessarily shouldn't be like, oh, I'm all so amazing. But there's different ways of doing it, and you don't want it to restrict your ambition and your desire to get to the top of whatever your field is, whatever your thing that you're obsessed with is. And I suppose it does tie back into what you were just saying about the or what we were just talking about women trying to support each other in the industry, in the sense that, yeah, the woman is still is in sports broadcasting and in sport still is a tall poppy, in this a more overt tall poppy, because it's almost like, oh you're a woman, that's quite ugh. You're right up in my face being so female. So I think there is a kind of fear sometimes associated with it that people might have about the compromises they've made in their own lives. If somebody seems to be flaunting what they're doing and really confident in it and really excited about it, and maybe you've had to make, you might have had to, everyone has to make compromises to some degree, but maybe if you feel like you've made compromises more than you wanted to about your work, or I don't know, about your family life or whatever it is, I think I mean, I get it comes from a social place of people trying to perhaps trying to be collegiate, and I think that's kind of admirable. But I think if we're talking specifically about the desire to cut someone down, which you do still see, and I think that probably comes from fear in the place of those people doing that. That fear that, yeah, if you do this, that I'm somehow less, or I'm somehow not going to have the opportunities that you have, and maybe it's not fair, or maybe you question yourself, what have I been doing? The truth is, though, of course, there's all these different ways that people can have success and excitement in their lives, and you're not going to be, you're not even Eric, it's not going to be the king of everything, right? You might be the best rower in the world, but you're not gonna you might, you might have challenges with your family, you might not have been the best in school, whatever it is. So I think another element to it also is just like, it's cool that people should be tall poppies in different areas of life. That's just quite inspiring and beautiful.
It is cool. I really like that. And just thank you. There are so many things there. And part of that fear, I do really agree. And probably my experience when I'm feeling choppy, like I'm, because we all have our internal thoughts, right? Where I'm like,
Totally. Yeah,
I might
God.
not say it, but you're like, oh, in your head, you immediately go. And I think it's because sometimes to admit that maybe we're not reaching our goals or our aspirations, especially in the athletic field, like, because you have pretty direct comparison, like
Oh my God,
that
yeah.
isn't, because I often say, like, oh, your success is not a threat to mine. But in some situations, like if there's only four people in a boat,
Totally
then
can be.
your success is a threat to mine. And so when I'm feeling that kind of coming on, I think about, like, that's where the tall poppy presents itself, because for you to admit, oh, maybe like I've fallen short, or I'm not quite where I want to be, and I see that person doing it, it's quite comforting to be like, okay, yeah, well, they're in the boat, but like their grades suck or something, like to try
Yes,
make you feel better. So that is how it's coming through. It's self-protection a lot of the time when it's going that way. And I also think that it does serve a purpose in general, not on that front, but like in society, where you do want to have some humility and some grace about you. And in New Zealand, we really prioritize that. It's like, work hard in silence, let success speak for you, all these things. But And I think it does help build resilience. It's all these things. And that's why the topic's so fascinating to me, because everyone interacts with it differently. There's this one high performance psychologist, Jonah Oliver, who I'm fascinated with. And I had him on the podcast, and he talked about like the necessity of it to build resilience, and how those top athletes, like, they only get these egos because they really don't care what other people think, because chopping down is irrelevant to them. And they've put, again, through reps, they've built it up. So, and when he's saying that, I'm like, oh, I see what you're saying. So it's just a conversation to be had, right? Like, there's no yes or no, or you should do this, you shouldn't do this. I just think we should be aware of how we're interacting with it and why we're feeling these things. Like, if you feel like the chop coming, then it's reflecting. It's like, why do you feel like doing that? What's wrong with you? Like, not what's wrong with you, but what's going on within you to make you feel the need to do that?
Totally. It's information. When it comes from within you, it's information. I think that's definitely true. And that desire, that, I mean, most people in sport, generally in broadcasting around it, have some competitive urges, right? Otherwise, it probably wouldn't be. And so I think, but when it's from outside as well, I think it's quite useful to use it, the phrase in your mind as a touch point to say, look, this might not be useful information for me. So again, I reference the social media thing. Sometimes people have an urge to be negative about, I don't want to say, well, we know that from the Paris Olympics there was I can't remember, the vast majority of negative content was on female athletes as opposed to male athletes. And so I was going to say it probably is also a gender. I mean, I don't know why I'm being woolly about this. I mean, it definitely is a gender thing where people are more rude about female broadcasters in sport, female athletes as well. And so, but the thing is, every time that stuff comes in and is communicated to you, you're often alone, with your phone. When I receive it, you don't have someone next to you reminding you, oh, okay, look, this might not be like a sincere bit of feedback. It might just be the person just being a dickhead, because they're having a sad time. And of course, most of the time, I know that that's probably true. But some of the time, I am just like, what? Why would you want to target me? I'm just going along trying to do my thing. I don't want to have an impact. Ideally, I would have a positive impact on you, but I'm really definitely not trying to get up in your grill in any way. And so I think sometimes it's really helpful to remember that people might just take pot shots at you partly because of this. It's like, oh, look, there she is. She's right there. So I have the right to be unpleasant about her. It's not great, that element. But if you can understand, like, understanding is the first step towards acceptance of stuff like that, because I think it's an instinct and you don't have to pay for it. You can just do that.
Thank you for saying that. It's understanding. It's not accepting, because those are very different things. Like, I don't accept those social media comments, but I understand where they're coming from. And we do know that for some reason online, it feels very anonymous. It's not. Like, in fact, people read and they recognize and they feel the impact. So while, yes, you might understand it, to this is a bit of a PSA too. I'm sure none of my listeners would do this, but acknowledging that, like, the tall poppies, right? The tall poppies, like, they do read comments and they do receive. And it's like, no matter how strong and resilient they come across, just don't be a dick. Like, keep those comments in. And then also, it's the whole classic, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. That's different to critical. Like, you can maybe, if there's actual feedback, like, I'm sure you would love to receive if you miscalled something, right? Like, if there's things like
Yeah,
that.
but you don't have to want to kill me. I know it might be annoying, but people do make mistakes.
It's like,
Sorry.
if there's that, like, there's feedback. If it's like technical and technical and you're like, oh, I didn't realize that this was called to this. Oh, thank you. Okay, like, we're actually a community. We're working together, as opposed to that. So just really kudos to you that you are keeping such a positive, enthusiastic approach to it, because it really is quite serious stuff. So I just want to make sure that that's known, of like, while you're smiley and you're very positive, that like,
Thank
that
you.
does hit, right?
Yeah, it does. Of course, it does. And I actually think it's interesting how people don't recognize necessarily that the people on the end of it are human beings. And I think this is a tall poppy thing as well, in the sense that sometimes people see you on TV, right? This is a person who's been put on TV. Okay. So therefore, they're not really necessarily someone I have to identify with, or this is someone separate to me, if that makes sense. I'm going to think a bit more about this. I'm just kind of thinking it through as I talk to you. But the thing about it is that I get it, right? Because sometimes you're watching, obviously I've sat in my sitting room and I've said to my friend or to my boyfriend or whoever, oh, that guy's such a prick or whatever. You do it because people are set up as like characters that you don't know. They're not your friends. That's completely understandable. And I saw this great video on TikTok a few days ago. I don't remember who the woman was, but she did this whole hilarious riff, but pointed riff about how somebody's like wedding dress had gone viral. They posted a video of it, and some people had like, I don't know, they'd maybe been doing a dance, whatever. I didn't see the original video. And she said that so many of the comments were like, at this person, your dress is gross or whatever. Like, she's heard the point that she made was, I don't think people have got enough friends group chats. If you want to, if you really need to slag someone off who's
Send it to the group chat.
why are you sending it to this person? Why are you telling me that you hate my voice? What do you want me to do about that? I'm so sorry you hate my voice. I actually happily think I've got quite a nice voice.
Agree.
Well, thank you. But I get it. It's not everybody's cup of tea. Maybe they might prefer that it was a male voice. Who knows? But they might also they might also just not like it. That's fine. You can't be expected. I'm sorry, but maybe in the future, broadcasting will be set up so that each person watching each broadcast has a perfect community of AI bots that will speak in the voice that they absolutely prefer. But for now, it is done based on humans. And I'm sorry, I cannot adapt my voice to be the perfect voice that you love the most in your life. Yeah, tell your friends.
Tell your friends, that is such an actionable, tangible takeaway immediately. Okay, I have one more serious question before I sign off one. And I just find it very interesting when you are in high performance like you are, and we often think high performance sport, but high performance is everywhere. So how would you describe high performance?
This is a real challenging one, by the way, Grace, because there is a podcast called High Performance. I think it's just called High Performance in the UK that is very, very successful. And I happen to find it a little bit grating because it's quite a lot of people opining about how important they are. And so anyway, in my mind, unfortunately, high performance is now very associated with this idea of like people being very, very serious about how great they are. That's a sidebar. I do, the concept of it is really like an important one in the terms of like people, if you're doing something seriously, how are you gonna do it to the best of your ability without also like trashing everything else in your life? Because I think broads, a lot of, and again, a lot of the kind of high performance conversations that I've heard in the past have sometimes, and I think there's less of this now, but certainly in sports and in football and NFL and various other things, have underestimated the value of the contribution of the caregivers, the people who are looking after the children of this top level, whoever, all these other elements. So for me, it's actually quite a like it's a phrase that actually has a whole load of weird connotations in my mind rather than just a sincere one, which I imagine is what you are thinking about. So for me, it's about trying to do stuff to the best of your ability while also recognizing the privilege that you have in order to be able to be in a position to do
Wow.
stuff to the best of your ability, and not trampling all over, not necessarily, or not ever try to trample all over other people who make it possible for you to do the thing. I'm so lucky to have got to the position of being able to try and hone my broadcasting to make it the best it can be. If I hadn't had the opportunities along the way, that wouldn't have been possible. If I hadn't had a really good education like I did, I don't know if I would have had the confidence to even say, oh, I should be the one that you put on your sports broadcast. Like, That's quite a big stretch, isn't it? Why should it be me? I don't know. Now I've learned some stuff, and hopefully I have the skills and all these different elements to get there. But in the beginning, yeah, a lot of it is about having the chance to, I don't know, train, if you want to call it train, but to practice in broadcasting to try to get to that point. And yeah, so that's what I would say. It's like it's a thing that people. The idea of it is venerated and connected to all of these posts about like, oh, I get up at 5 a.m. and I drink like a liter of water and I've got special vitamins that the Pope gave to me. But I don't think for me, it's not that.
Again, these are why these questions, the high performance one, I don't ask all the time, but I ask it often because it's so fascinating and it takes me to a thought often of, if you're a jack of all trades, you're a master of none. I'm like, what's wrong with being a jack of all trades? Like, seems like a good person to have around. Like,
Totally.
right?
Yeah, and being
I want
flexible and
them.
having agility to, yeah.
Yeah, I want the jack of all trades. Then I can have them on my team. So thank you. But for my sign-off question, is there anything, and granted, I know there could be a lot, but anything I didn't ask you that you think I should have during this interview?
No, I would never say that. It's your interview. I love the way that you're phrasing it. It's right. No, I think you're such a good interviewer, dude. So, it feels like, yeah, you're great. Just someone actually, again, another one of these students, they obviously had a big impact on me. He asked me about like I'm a bit nervous about doing a YouTube series because what if I have a guest on there and they're not that interesting. I mean, he didn't put it quite like that, but they don't answer the they don't and there's a pause and it's awkward, I think was what he said. And I think the same thing, if you listen well and if you've done your research, like there's that's the secret to it. So yeah, I don't want to make this all about your identity, but I feel like this is a deep answer.
Good, good. I
It's
welcome
so
it.
I didn't mean to be so that's I'm not trying to be pretentious. I just mean like in terms of what you're trying to create, I think you've asked all the right questions.
Oh, well, thank you. That really means a lot coming from you. I appreciate that. And I'm all about that conversation and the concept. I think about a lot of identity is such a big one because I think I've had the privilege of shifting a lot from like student Kiwi to then like this athlete in the States to now like I'm on this next era and being able to have very clear chapters of like that was my athlete identity and
Yes,
now I'm this.
yes.
And so I think about that. I'm like, oh, because if you met me when I was athlete, you would have
Right.
a different perception because that was a different identity. So
Completely.
I love that answer. Thank you. And now to completely shift gears, sign off question, potentially the most difficult one is what most people say. If you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, who's it gonna be?
Oh my God. Listen to one musical artist. Is it a bit of a dodge to make it? I can make it be a pop like a popular one if you want, but I actually think the true answer is a composer, is
Oh,
Tchaikovsky. Is that allowed?
yes,
Yeah.
yeah.
When I was a kid, I was quite serious. I played the violin quite seriously alongside. I was squash was the other thing that I was doing to like a decent level, but I also played the violin. I was part of the National Youth Orchestra, practiced a lot, and in that time I became very obsessed with this Russian composer Tchaikovsky, and I learned his. He has one violin concerto which I learned. It's very difficult, but I got there in the end. And I think that the thing about him is that there is so much richness to the different. Ways that he constructs what he's doing. And I feel like if it was for the rest of my life, honestly, maybe like Lady Gaga, whatever, she's got an incredible, maybe if I was trying to answer that, but honestly, I think I could learn forever if I was just listening to him and trying to figure it all out.
Love it. That's why that's such a good question, right? Because you get people and they're like, what are their main values? Because some people want songs that are going to make them feel emotional for the rest of their life, or they need the hype up or whatever. But And again, later you'll think about it and be like, oh, but I think that's a great answer. Well, it's your answer, so it doesn't really matter what I think. It's a great
Thank
great
you. Oh,
answer.
thank you so much. I did this that particular concerto does really get me like hyped up as well, because I played it in quite a I got to perform it in like a big concert hall when I was like 17. And yeah, so I still get that like pump. I would get a lot, like the range of it is still available to me, you know, the pump up and the, you know, and
Yes.
the emotion, and then also just like the thinking behind it all.
Yeah, everything associated. Well, Kate, it has been seriously such an honor to have you on Tall Poppy Talk, and just to be able to say to your face, thank you for all that you do, because there's people like me who are motivated and like see a very clear path. Not that we're going to take that, but we're like, you carved your one, I can carve my one. So thank you.
Oh, best of luck with it. You're doing fantastically. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials, YouTube, and the website. Thanks for today's guest, and we'll see you all next time. Take care. Be kind.